Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to another edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me is Jasmine Smith, as always. We are going to talk to you about major issues about policy and politics in the state of Kentucky. This week, we're going to talk to you about a new investigative panel that Gregory Stumbo is launching to investigate claims against Governor Bevin, the shutdown of the Connect Health Insurance Exchange, and the restoration of voting rights, in addition to some quick hits. So, without any further ado, Jasmine, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right, Jasmine, tell us about Greg Stumbo and his new panel.
All right. So last week, Kentucky House Speaker Greg Stumbo appointed a panel to investigate claims that Matt Bevin delayed a road project in Nicholasville as political retribution. You may remember that we talked about this story in a previous episode. Representative Russ Meyer claimed that he was threatened by Matt Bevin to switch parties and that he had the voicemail to prove it. And we talked about while maybe the voicemail wasn't necessarily a smoking gun, it seemed pretty suggestive. Matt Bevin said things like, "You've got to understand the decision that you're making and how that may affect our position in the coming weeks, months, and your seat." And it was vague, but suggestive, I would say.
Right. And when you say smoking gun, I tend to think of illegal actions. Would this constitute something illegal by the governor, this specific action of trying to get him to switch parties?
Well, I think the voicemail in itself doesn't lead to much, but that seems to be why Greg Stumbo is launching this panel. He put three Democrats and two Republicans on the panel, and those people are Jim Wayne, a Democrat from Louisville, Joni Jenkins, a Democrat from Shively,
which is in Louisville.
Right. Arnold Simpson, a Democrat from Covington, Jimmy Stewart, a Republican from Flatlick, and David Floyd, a Republican from Bardstown. Some of the GOP leadership has said that they don't think that David Floyd will participate on this panel. I don't know if he has said that, but that's what I've heard from, I believe, Bevin's chief of staff said that. Bevin's chief of staff, Blake Brickman, also called Stumbo's move political and a total farce.
So this is about the road closure, right?
Right. This is about the road project in Nicholasville that was delayed, which Nicholasville is Russ Meyer's district, and he's the one who told Matt Bevin he would not switch parties, and he believes that Matt Bevin is retaliating against him by delaying his district's road project.
Right.
And so Greg Stumbo released documents indicating that the landowner of the land in Nicholasville was asking $434,000 and the state was only willing to pay $225,000. Instead, because of the delay in the project, the state ended up having to pay $625,000 in damages for delaying the project. So Greg Stumbo believes that this, along with that voicemail, warrants taking a closer look at what's really going on.
And if I remember correctly, there's some evidence to the contrary that there's, you know, some people who had been working in the transportation department who were
right.
Kind of like, you know, this is normal. The whole thing wasn't ready in the first place. We were kind of left. This was in the middle of a political transition. We're kind of surprised things weren't up and up in the first place. So that's what Matt Bevin's going to use as a defense, right?
It's Bevin's position that Governor Beshear rushed this project. And someone from the Department of Transportation did come out and say, it would be difficult maybe to get the utilities that we need for the project. This is normal that this something like this could happen. But I don't know. Greg Stumbo believes there's enough to take a look. So the panel will have limited authority, and that is to investigate whether Matt Bevin threatened lawmakers who refused to switch parties. And the panel will have subpoena power and the ability to take witness testimony. I believe the Republicans are saying that he does not have the authority to create such a panel. I don't really know the legal answer to that. I don't know what their position is on why they don't have the authority to do it. I know that similar panels have been created in the past. I believe there was one in 2013 related to sexual harassment.
Right.
It ended up, they dissolved the panel because the representative resigned. But I know that there have been similar panels in the past, and maybe someone who knows a little bit more about administrative law
right.
might know something about that. But they have limited authority, and that's just to investigate this one issue. And if they do find evidence, Matt Bevin could potentially face official misconduct charges or abuse of public trust charges.
So it was a mere 12 years ago, not even that long, maybe 10 years ago, when Greg Stumbo was the Attorney General and Ernie Fletcher was the governor. And Greg Stumbo was investigating a different governor and managed to turn up some serious problems that really probably cost Governor Fletcher re-election.
Right.
So maybe he's, I mean, Greg Stumbo kind of has a history of doing these kind of investigative acts against Republicans, so I can understand why Republicans wouldn't trust him. But at the same time, to me it seems like the alternative is having this investigated in the Attorney General's office.
Right.
Who certainly has the authority to do this sort of thing.
And we should also remember that Matt Bevin has launched a formal investigation against Governor Beshear.
Right.
And so
there's just investigations.
So Republicans are saying, oh, well, he can totally do that. But they're saying, oh, Greg Stumbo can't do this. And so I guess it just depends on which side you're on.
Yeah, it almost certainly does. Well, if anything comes of this, we will certainly keep you abreast of what turns up. All right.
So now we're going to go to our healthcare expert, Robert Conney, to talk to us about Connect.
Again, with the expert. I'm not sure if I'm an expert, but we'll see. Okay, so Connect was shut down just this week. The federal government gave Kentucky approval to shut it down. Connect, if you didn't know, was the health insurance marketplace run by the state of Kentucky. In 2010, when the federal government passed the Affordable Care Act, it envisioned a system where states set up health insurance marketplaces, health insurance exchanges, where insurance products would be available to buy on an individual basis. So if you watched the debate the other day and heard Hillary Clinton talking about how our healthcare system is essentially an employer-based system and how that's kind of unusual, there was a lot of jumbled talking in that debate, so if you didn't catch it, I don't blame you. But essentially, she was making the point that it's unusual and different than the rest of the world, but most people in the United States receive health insurance from their employer. You get it as a condition of your employment, or your employer pays for a big chunk of the premiums. And then what the Affordable Care Act attempted to do is to, what she said, fill in the gaps. And so the way that we wanted to fill in the gaps for the people who didn't receive employer-based coverage was to have these state marketplaces where the government would pay a premium for most people to pay the premiums related to their health insurance, and that the marketplace would be the place where they went to shop. So the federal government, when they passed this law, they envisioned all 50 states having a marketplace where people could go. And then they said if the state governments refused to set one up, that they would have a federal exchange that would fill in the gaps for other states. And that was called healthcare.gov. Now, Steve Beshear was the governor when the ACA was passed. And I remember in the days right after it was passed, there were a lot of people who were very interested, curious to see what Governor Beshear was going to do, because it was very politically unpopular in Kentucky. And Governor Beshear said, no, this is a good thing. We need to have health insurance for the people of the state. So he went all in on the ACA. And that ended up, I mean, to me, that became his legacy in many ways. He started Connect and expanded Medicaid. And Kentucky ended up being one of only a handful of states to set up a state exchange.
So the federal exchange was meant to be more of a backup to fill in the gaps, but really not very many states even set up their own exchange?
Yeah, only a handful of states, I think 11 or 12 in total, set up an exchange at all, and Kentucky was one of them. And if you'll remember, when the healthcare.gov launched, it was a huge national story that it didn't work.
Right.
And it crashed, and nobody could sign up for health insurance, and nobody could shop. Well, Connect worked great, and it garnered a lot of national praise, and it had a lot of things working for it. I mean, I think one of the reasons this federal government wanted to set up all these state exchanges, or they wanted to have the states set up exchanges, was because they could address these individual tendencies inside the states, and Connect was really good about that. There were several things that made it very unique. First of all, it worked in sync with the Medicaid expansion. So if you wanted health insurance, no matter what, if you didn't have it, you would go to Connect, and they would tell you whether you were eligible for Medicaid or if you needed to buy health insurance with a subsidy, or you just needed to buy it on the individual market. The federal exchange did not have that system. So people who are going to enroll now they can check their eligibility on Benefind, and if they're not eligible for Medicaid, they have to go to the federal exchange. And then the federal exchange will tell them if they're eligible for Medicaid, and if they are, they need to get off of the federal exchange and go to Benefind. So that's two systems.
So you can no longer do it in one place.
Exactly. The next thing that happened was that there were these people called connectors that were there to help people fill out their paperwork. And the way that Kentucky had it set up was that these people could literally fill out the paperwork for these people. And the federal exchange, there's a lot more limitations about what these people can do. I don't think that they're allowed to actually do the paperwork anymore. The individuals actually have to do the application.
So you've got to be a little bit more savvy. You can't call a connector and have them do it for you.
Exactly. Another great thing about it, or, you know, a good thing about it, I think, was that it re-enrolled people the next year. So, you know, if you were eligible again, it would just, you know, check your eligibility and let you know it was time to enroll again. Now you just have to know that it's time and you have to enroll during the open enrollment period. And the last piece, and I think really importantly, it was heavily publicized by the state government. If you listen to the radio or watch TV at any point in the past several years, you probably saw lots of commercials for Connect. I think they permeated the state with knowledge about this insurance.
They did. They handed out free tote bags a lot. I have a bunch of Connect tote bags at home.
Man, I don't have – I want one. I'm going to miss this when it's gone. So regardless, Governor Bevin, when he campaigned explicitly on dismantling Connect. He called the system unsustainable. And so including Medicaid recipients, about 500,000 people ended up gaining insurance through Connect. That's a lot of people, you know, so maybe that cost a lot of money. And I could see how if people were hearing him talk about this massive expansion in the number of people that were covered, that would be a problem. But here's the thing. Connect was funded through the Connect Insurance Exchange. The actual exchange was funded through a 2% tax on providers, which is fairly standard across the nation. And in fact, even with Connect being gone, that tax will still be in place because the federal exchange costs money too, and it expects a 1.5%.
So it's not, that's not going to change at all.
Not going to change at all.
Still going to be a 2%
tax. Will still be a 2% tax. There's talk about in the session they're going to reduce the tax to 1.5%, which is what the federal exchange requires, or get rid of it altogether. But regardless, I mean, if they don't do anything, that tax is still going to be there. The next thing is we spent a lot of money to spin this up. It was paid for by the federal government, but it's going to cost money to take it down. So even though we had it paid for by the federal government to set it up, Governor Bevin estimates the cost at $11 million to take it down. Governor Beshear says it's going to be $23 million, which is what his estimate was during the campaign in the days after Governor Bevin was elected and he was still the governor. So before Governor Bevin was inaugurated. So we're spending a whole bunch of money to take something down that works great. We are still going to be charged to have an exchange that doesn't work as well. To me, it's like pulling the wings off a butterfly a little bit. It was this really cool thing that Kentucky had done really well, and for nothing.
I mean, we were applauded nationally for how well our exchange worked, right?
And you know, there is a little bit of truth to the fact that that was a relative comparison to the federal
right,
exchange.
To the federal exchange.
But there was a lot that worked really well, and people across the country really looked at Kentucky as a model. Kentucky, along with Arkansas, saw the steepest drop in uninsured rates across the country. And really, this whole process has only served to confuse people. A lot of the people who had done the connecting in the past are very confused about where people are going to need to go. The open enrollment period is ongoing, so the connectors didn't know whether Connect or the federal exchange was where they were going to need to go, and there hasn't been any publication of this so far. We just received word that this was going to go through.
So what do they do now?
Now everybody who receives insurance on the individual market is going to have to sign up on healthcare.gov during the open enrollment period, which is ongoing. It's going on right now, and there's a little bit longer period of time. I mean, I don't remember exactly the dates, but every single person, there's no automatic re-enrollment on healthcare.gov, so every single person is going to have to get on there and buy something or else face a tax penalty. And then if they don't, they're going to have no insurance. So it's a lot of confusing stuff for negative benefit. Governor Bevin has faced a lot of criticism saying this is ideologically driven. I think that criticism is 100% earned. There is no reason to get rid of this system, except for just because you don't think the state government should be involved in the health insurance business. So, there you go.
That's sad.
To me, it's incredibly sad. It's incredibly sad. So, you know, elections have consequences. That's the lesson to take away here. Governor Bevin campaigned on taking this down, and he's following through on a promise he made. So on one level, you know, you got to respect him for keeping his campaign promises. But on the other hand, you have to wonder why people wanted that to happen. Anyways, Jasmine, tell us about the restoration of voting rights.
Well, this is also a little sad. More than 6 million Americans cannot vote because of past criminal convictions. Some of these convictions are decades old. They've been law-abiding citizens with jobs and families since then, but they still cannot exercise their right to vote. Laws denying felons the right to vote, as we know, have a very disproportionate impact on minorities, and I mean, not to mention the number of arrests and people incarcerated, also disproportionate number of minorities, but that's a topic for another day. But Kentucky is one of the worst states when it comes to restoring voting rights. Voting rights can only be restored by the governor in Kentucky, and we are one of only three states that still has total disenfranchisement. A lot of states have laws that allow for voting rights to be restored immediately upon release of prison. Some are after they've completed sentences, parole, probation. Some felons don't even lose their voting rights if they're probated.
I believe in Vermont you can even vote from prison.
Right. I think Vermont is the best about that. Kentucky is one of the worst. And restoration efforts have been made, but they've all failed. There was a bill that passed the state house but died in the Senate. And then,
of course, the state house being controlled by Democrats and the state Senate being controlled by Republicans.
Right. And Governor Beshear, in 2015, issued an executive order providing for a restoration process, but Matt Bevin issued a new order that returned us to the prior procedure, which is no restoration procedure. So only the governor can restore voting rights. Matt Bevin stated during his campaign and since his election that he actually supports the restoration of voting rights for nonviolent felons who have completed their sentences. I disagree with Matt Bevin on a lot of things, but some of the things that he has said about criminal justice reform, I've supported. He wanted to give more money to public defenders. I support that. He talked about voting restoration quite a bit during his campaign. So he's been in office for 10 months now and has restored the rights of zero people.
Wow. So we had just finished talking about how with Connect, Governor Bevin was following through on a campaign promise he made, but it seems like for this one, he has not left that one on the table.
So this is the only way in Kentucky, and he hasn't restored the voting rights of anyone. And just taking a look at his predecessors, Governor Beshear issued an average of 1,190 restorations per year, and even his predecessor, Ernie Fletcher, issued an average of 277 per year. And I mean, I know it's his first year in office, maybe next year, but he's been in office for 10 months and hasn't restored any. I don't know. I know that over 800 applications have been submitted. I guess they're all just sitting there while Matt Bevin is creating new boards and destroying boards and taking selfies.
So I remember this has been an issue for a very long time in the state of Kentucky, and Kentuckians for the Commonwealth has been really active on this issue for a really long time. And I can remember back when Ernie Fletcher was the governor that he basically restored them whenever he felt like doing it. And then when Governor Beshear was elected, he had like a whole process where there was an application that was filled out and sent to the governor, and the governor, I think he basically restored everybody that asked for it, but you had to essentially ask.
Right.
So I guess, you know, that process isn't, that was something that was created by Governor Beshear, and people are just filling out that same application and sending it to Governor Bevin. There isn't, I basically mean to say there's nothing magical about that form. That just indicates that you want to have your voting rights restored.
Yes. And this is an issue that has bipartisan support. There are a lot of criminal justice issues that have bipartisan support, and this is one of them. And just, this is a non-Kentucky related fact. While Jeb Bush was the governor of Florida, he restored the voting rights of 76,000 people. So, you know, Matt Bevin says he supports this, but he hasn't done anything about it yet. Hopefully, he'll continue to get called out and maybe take action.
I mean, there's a cynical way to look at it, which is to say the people who, the communities who are mostly disenfranchised are more likely to be Democrats than Republicans. And so there's a lot of people who say that Republicans don't want to restore the rights of people who aren't going to vote for them. This is why I think it's important to get this process out of the hands of people and out of the hands of governors and, you know, just have it automatic restoration be there. Because,
right.
I mean, it would be tough for me as somebody who is running for office to be like, yeah, none of these people are going to vote for me, but I'm going to enfranchise them anyway, even though that's the right thing to do. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I hope that because Governor Bevin's expressed that he thinks it's the right thing to do, that he follows through with it. So I guess we'll keep everybody informed to see what happens here.
Right.
Okay, Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the first thing, this came across my wire today, which is October the 11th. Kate Howard, who is a writer, a reporter, a journalist with WFPL and the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, she wrote a very long piece about the University of Louisville Foundation, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast.
We have.
They bought an empty factory in Oklahoma and lost a lot of money on it. And the only reason they bought it, according to her, was because a donor asked them to. An empty factory in Oklahoma. Yeah, it's a very interesting piece. We're going to link the actual writing. She also has a radio story about it, so if you don't want to read, you can listen. It's a very interesting piece, a good piece of investigative journalism here in the state of Kentucky. We support that, so we want you to pay attention to it.
Things that just keep coming about the UofL Foundation, I just continue to be more and more baffled.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors about everyone more insane than the next, and because so many of them turned out to be true that you just hear things and you're like, I guess that's plausible because so much other weird stuff has happened, so whatever. Okay, Jasmine, quick hit number two. Kentuckians can no longer access the Homeland Security National Headquarters with their driver's license. So, Jasmine, if you are in Washington, D.C., and you're walking down the street and you're like, I really want to go to the Homeland Security National Headquarters, you better have a passport because your driver's license is no longer going to cut it. The reason is Kentucky is not in compliance with the Real ID Act, which was an act of Congress that was passed when George W. Bush was president, so it's been a long time.
While.
Yeah, and Kentucky has, there's a lot of standards that it needs to meet. The driver's license process needs to be centralized in the state. Right now, it's a function of the county clerk's office and all the counties across the state. There's a bunch of other stuff that needs to happen too. Kentucky's received several extensions. They asked for another, and it does not look like it's been granted. So once we've been out of compliance for a longer period of time, there's other things we can't do. We can't go into nuclear power plants.
Great.
There's a couple of other things that we wouldn't be able to do. I don't remember what they are off the top of our heads, but this is something that's probably going to be before the legislature this year. It was before the legislature last year and didn't pass at the last minute, so let's see what happens. Hope you don't want to go to a nuclear power plant anytime soon. So, the last quick hit of all, Jasmine. Negative Senate ads. Both Jim Gray and Rand Paul are running negative ads against each other for the first time, and let me just tell you, they are ridiculous. I'm not the type of person who's like, negative ads are horrible. I understand you have to run negative ads to win most of the time. These are dumb. Jim Gray is essentially using the words of Donald Trump against Rand Paul, saying he's got a big picture of Donald Trump in one of the presidential debates basically being like, Rand Paul is an idiot. I don't know if that's going to endear him to many people. I guess it's likely Donald Trump wins the state of Kentucky, but you're not fooling anybody. I think if Donald Trump were voting... Actually, I don't want to say that. I don't know who Donald Trump would vote for in the Senate race because he's a very unpredictable man. Rand Paul's ad against Jim Gray is a little bit more effective, but it's equally ridiculous. But you'll probably be seeing these on your television soon, so get
ready. Did you see Jim Gray on Matt Jones' new show, Hey Kentucky?
I did not. Tell me what happened.
They played a game of Rand Paul or RuPaul, like a Who Said It game.
Oh,
and Jim Gray was only 4-for-7 in Rand Paul versus RuPaul.
Does that mean that Rand Paul is a lot like RuPaul, or that Jim Gray just doesn't know much about either one of
those
two?
Some of them were really tough.
I mean, if RuPaul ran for Senate in Kentucky, I would definitely vote for him in any of his personas. So, you know, I don't know. That's funny.
You can watch that online.
So the Senate race... likely not going to be close, but we'll see.
Probably not.
We'll see. Okay, Jasmine, that's it for the quick hits. That's it for the show. You can read about our show notes on Medium. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to our podcast on any podcasting application that you may choose to listen to. You can follow us on Twitter. I've been trying to use the Twitter recently to kind of highlight some stories in the middle of the week. We talk about some of them, but some of them we don't talk about on the show. So if you want to continue to know more about state government, state politics, follow us, and I'll be sure to send some stuff out that you might want to read.
And that's at My Old KY Pod.
Yeah, and you can like us on Facebook at My Old Kentucky Podcast. Show notes on Medium at My Old Kentucky Podcast. And that's about it, right, Jasmine?
Think so.
All right. Thanks for being here with us.
Bye.